Welcome to the Women and Wealth Podcast with Esther Szabo. Esther is a respected leader in the field of personal financial advice with over 25 years of experience. After going through her own significant and challenging life-changing events, she overcame fear and self-doubt to launch her own successful advisory firm. Now Esther is ready to share her practical and personal experiences to help other women clear their hurdles and brave life's transitions. In this way, she inspires women to lead fulfilling and confident lives.
Hello and welcome to Women and Wealth with Esther Szabo from Gates Pass Advisors. Good morning, Esther. How are you?
Good morning. I am doing well. It's a Friday. I'm ready for a weekend and then to get right back at it next week.
Absolutely. I'm excited to be here with you. And the audience doesn't know this, and it doesn't reflect in the podcast that we do, but we've actually got to meet twice this week. So that's a treat for me. I'm excited. This is going out with a bang for my Friday. I'm ready. So what are we talking about today?
Well, today what we're talking about is one of the primary jobs I have, and people might think, oh, that's financial planning or that's portfolio management. And that's true in terms of the tasks, but if we really look at it, what we do is reduce complexity for our clients.
Mm-hmm.
And this field is full of jargon. Have you noticed, Eric?
Just a wee bit, yeah.
I was at a meeting this morning, and it was actually an accountant, but it's still within the financial professions, talking about what he was doing for his clients. And I was like, holy cow, there is so much jargon there. And I'm sure he's an incredible professional. There's no doubt there. But it was like, what did he just say?
Yeah. Yeah. Need a dictionary all the time with you.
And I imagine that's very true for clients, for those listening. There's been discussion, especially among women, how much women even get spoken down to in the financial meetings that they may have. Yep. With their spouse or partner, even if they're the ones who are their primary breadwinners, the eyes automatically go to the men, and it's all this complicated talk. So that doesn't really help. I mean, that's the thing. It doesn't really add that much. So what we do is we really reduce complexity for our clients. And I'm going to do that today with our forecast for 2020.
I'm gonna add something to what you just said about meetings with men and women. And yes. And working with advisors, as long as I have, what we found is that a husband and wife go in and the advisor will talk and have the jargon, and the husband and the wife don't know what's being said, but the wife is many times too intimidated to speak up to say, can you please explain what you just said? Because she doesn't want to feel foolish because... Mm-hmm. They are talked down to quite a bit in this profession. Mm-hmm. And then the husband is too prideful to say, can you tell me what you just said? Because I don't understand. Right. And they don't want to look foolish either, but for two completely different reasons. Men are way more prideful. And as a man, I can say I've fallen into that category a lot. You can ask my mm-hmm. wife. I let pride push me into a lot of things. So it's something that needs to change. And there's a lot of folks out there that really understand this, and obviously you're one of them. But yeah, so I just thought I'd say that because it's both people don't know what the jargon is, but neither one of them want to speak up, and that's a shame.
Right,
and that's
for what different needs to change. Reasons.
Yep.
Yeah, and both absolutely. Of them have to do with shame. You know, I should know. Both of them, the underlying is, well, I should know what this is, but I'm supposed to, and I'm embarrassed to ask. And
yeah.
It's really important. At the end of the day, it's the client's money. It's the client's money that they've worked for years and years and years, or have mm-hmm. been inherited, or however it came. And it's very critical. And so we really welcome the questions and constantly practice to not get too jargony.
Yeah.
And you will see that even though it's February when this is coming out, I am going to proceed with my predictions for
all
2020.
Right.
Most people do that in January. I took care of January in some other ways in our podcasts. So we're returning now to forecasting.
All right, let's go.
Well, a client emailed me recently that they had read that it was time to go to cash in portfolios.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And what did I recommend? And it was so interesting because this is a client I've worked with for many, many years. We had just met recently, during which we had talked about where our position was with regards to the markets, which is basically that we think it will be a bumpy ride, but overall, and there will be volatility, but overall, especially if one looks at cash yields being so low, basically at the most what we're seeing is about 1.5% for short-term cash. You factor in inflation being at least 2%. For those who, and the same client too, they had their medical insurance premiums go up by over 10%. So you net that all out. If you're sitting in cash, you have a negative return. Yeah. Bonds are not that much better. So we really are, I don't like to say the word bullish, but we feel comfortable with allocation in stocks, primarily U.S. stocks, for the most return, but have the expectations tempered for what level of return that might be, especially coming on the heels of 2019, which was a high teens return for the market. Mm-hmm. But it was so interesting to me because he just had heard all of this. He's not new to me, not new to my philosophy about how to do important strategic financial, how to set up a financial and maintain a financial strategy that we base it out of customized financial planning. We stick to the plan. We make adjustments. We always keep that plan alive. Is it really happening this way? What's happening with you, client? Any changes, asset allocation around that? Showing the client how much is not invested in the stock market, mm-hmm. how much is in bonds, how much money is just being generated off of what they have in the form of dividends and interest, all of these things. And we've been adhering to this for years, and not just the good years, you know, the Great Recession years, where over that period, the Dow was down 50%. I mean, some really serious times. But there's always these headlines out there, and they're not necessarily news. They're often, well, it's a new term, clickbait. They're trying to draw clicks, trying to draw attention.
Absolutely. In fact, I knew you were going to be talking about clickbait. So I did a little research on clickbait. Okay. You ready?
Oh, good. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So took some of the top headlines that are clickbait that were used over the last couple of years, and they've made some lists. And when I did my research, I found some interesting things too. So here's a couple of the ones that worked the best. There was a picture of some kids in swimming suits that were in midair, and the title was, "When you find out what these kids are jumping into, your jaw will drop."
What were they jumping into?
Esther, it was a pool. Can you believe that? It was the article was about a pool. Now, it was a nice pool, but it was a pool. So really, is that dropping? Okay. How about the, "When you read these 19 shocking food facts, you'll never want to eat again." The food facts were about some foods have high calories. Can you believe that? After all that talk about potato chips on our last podcast, I'm just finding out that some foods are high in calories. Really? Okay. And then here's one that I love, the tab that it was under was economic news. "Here's a paycheck for a McDonald's worker, and here's my jaw dropping to the floor." That's the quotation. That's what you click on. Right. And the revelation was that fast food workers don't make much money. Can you believe that? I was shocked, surprised. Yeah. My jaw was dropping. I mean, you can see the pattern, but my favorite part is that in researching this, the titles to get to the articles to read and do the research, they were all clickbait. So here's some of the titles. "These 7 weird tricks for clickbait titles will change your life." Or, "How to create titles to get unbelievable results." "How to write headlines everyone loves." All these were things that to take me to learn about clickbait. "You won't believe these 9 shocking clickbaits, how they work." And number 8 is a killer. The theme here is fear, right?
Yeah.
Or something you don't know. It's going to be just absolutely shocking to you. Or you need to get in here because everyone loves this and so will you. So you either have to belong, you have to be surprised, or you have to be fearful of something. And that's what we see all the time in clickbait, especially lately with the finance news.
Absolutely. It's the what draws people in. And often, like with this particular client, it was a headline about market dropping, basically, mm-hmm. and how to keep yourself safe.
Fear.
Completely understandable, but it just draws people in. And then on the flip side, I could do a response, and I always, you know, responded in email and said that, well, this is what we think. This is why. Absolutely reach out if you'd like to schedule a call. Happy to talk to you. And he's like, nope, that's fine. And it just needs some response.
Yep. Assurance.
And that's fine. Assurance. And I love to hear what clients are thinking, actually. I'd much rather that they reach out to me and let me know what they're thinking than have these because just because he clicked on that one doesn't mean there aren't more coming, and it can just build up inside somebody rather than just get the reassurance, review everything, bring the mind to that conscious state where they're going, oh yes, I know how we are. Okay, great. And then let them go on with their lives and enjoy.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, Esther, here's the thing. If somebody has a title that says a recession is coming, and that's the click to get to an article to talk about how a recession is going to come, if it happens in 6 months, they're going to say, I told you so. If it happens in 3 years, they're going to say, I told you so.
Yeah.
It could happen in 10 years. I told you it was coming. Of course it was.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, there will be a recession. We can all, I can say that with great confidence. What I can't tell you is when it will be, how soon, or how much down the road, but absolutely there will be a recession. You know what else there's going to be, Eric? There's going to be a huge market drop.
Yes. Yep.
I mean, that will happen too. That's very reliable and consistent. The thing that is scary to the human brain is we don't know when.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
And that's why planning is not about, okay, we're going to figure out every single instance, but we're going to put it all out and put it together and look at the picture. And then we're going to test it and say, well, what are the risks that we see from our perspective? And it's really different when it's not, it's your client's money at risk, but I'm on the other side of this. I work with someone on my own money and planning. So I know what it's like on the receiving side and what things I might feel at risk. And so it's just like going to see when you're visiting your in-laws and they may really upset your spouse or just be like, oh God, Dad always does that. Whereas when it's an in-law, it's like, yeah, okay, I can see that, but it doesn't hit the same buttons. It's the same thing with money. When clients engage us, they are engaging an independent third party who is looking at this from an expert perspective of what are the risks that we see and then how do we want to protect against them? We can't stop them from happening, but we're saying, oh, like with this particular client that I'm mentioning, we did go through the Great Recession. Did it change anything fundamentally in their life? It did not. And for other clients as well, because we had safeguards built in. And the safeguards, well, did we run to cash in 2017 and not get in until March 10th of 2019? No, we went through it, but allocation helped and just navigating through. But I'll talk to that in a little bit later because things will occur in 2020 that we don't expect. But what the experts are saying is that, before I get to that, let me just tell you that, just for frame of reference, the Standard & Poor's 500, the S&P 500, which is basically the gauge for U.S. domestic stock market. It's the 500 largest companies in the U.S. market. And it closed December 31st at a level of 3230. So just park that number.
Okay.
Most people are familiar with the Dow Industrials, those 30 stocks. And that's what gets quoted mostly on the news. They'll quote the S&P, but most people are familiar, grew up with the Dow. So that closed December 31st of 2019 at 28,538. Do you know where it closed December 31st, 2008?
In 08? Oh, geez, yes. No.
That was just before the zenith, no, the nadir, the bottom of the market in March of 2009. But in December 31st, 2008, it closed at 87.76.
Wow, 20,000 point difference.
20,000 point difference between December 31st, 2008 and 2019. And in 2008, I mean, I was right here, I was working with people, and we didn't know when it would end. We didn't know when it would turn. But those that did move to cash, because it is really scary when you don't know, and you don't know if you're up for another huge drop in the market the next year. But those that did exit, you know, often missed that big return that started in March of 2009, just less than 90 days later.
Yeah.
So we always want to know forecasts, what's going to happen, because we're trying to get ourselves to a safe space with our investing often. And Business Insider did come out with a 2020 forecast they asked a number of experts. These are names that you'll be familiar with. And the most bullish is Oppenheimer. And they're predicting that the S&P 500 will move up about a little over 8.5% in 2020. On the other side, Morgan Stanley, UBS, they were the most bearish. They're predicting a 7% decline.
Wow.
that's quite a range, really. It's about 15% range. You would think everybody on Wall Street is going to say the same thing. No, people read the tea leaves different ways. And as a result of reading the tea leaves different ways, they're then going to recommend, they're still going to recommend being invested in the market, but what stocks do you buy? What stocks do you hold? What do you trim, et cetera, will be different based on the outlook.
Yeah.
And also, at the end of the day, does it really matter? Does it really matter whether it's going to go up 8.5 or more or down 7% or more?
Yes.
You could say, well,
it does matter.
It does. Yeah, right. It does matter to me.
It matters to the individual, but I understand where you're going with this. Absolutely.
Again, I sit on both sides of this table. And so absolutely, we wanted to know that and feel confident that we're invested accurately and adequately for the short and the long term, but it is completely, really unpredictable in the short term. And it always comes back to the plan. And gravitating to one of those predictions or the other, that's what can have very negative consequences for clients. We talked last time about the behavior gap in returns, how the studies are done over and over, how investors underperform the indexes. Mm. In 2014, investors underperformed the index by 8%. And that's the index where you could just invest in the index and have the index, and they underperformed. Why? Because of not being invested, by jumping out at the wrong time and not getting back in. And hearing predictions like this, especially if someone is more geared towards, it's the greed side, but it's also, to me, it's anxiety. It's anxiety of, you know, it's like FOMO, fear of missing out. I don't want to miss out on an 8% return. Mm-hmm. And they may crank up the dial on their equity exposure. And it's the same thing in reverse to me. If they hear, oh my gosh, market's going to go down 7%. I can't afford that. I'd better get out and move to cash. To me, the only forecast that really matters is the forecast of human behavior.
Yeah.
In response to this information and these headlines. And if someone's going through a transition on top of it, that can raise that scale of, okay, you know, the FOMO, I don't want to miss out on a gain, or I don't want to participate in a loss. It can really turn up the emotion there. And what do? We help them navigate this volatility. We help our clients every day navigate this volatility or even concern about volatility. This time last year, there was a lot more discussion about recession. We're actually one more year into an economic growth cycle where that would just by the odds bring us closer to the likelihood of a recession. But so far this year, hasn't been talk of a recession, even though there's anxiety about what's going on in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. There is supposedly a trade pact to be signed. All of these things that's calmed that. The Federal Reserve is not increasing interest rates. They're saying they're going to hold. They're not going to cut more, but they're going to hold. It seems to have calmed things, but we're not hearing about recession. But still, volatility will happen, and we can't control that and the outcomes of the market in this short-term period. Mm-hmm. But all of us can control how we behave and respond to them. You know, the financial markets and what they do, they're just one side of the investing equation. Remember algebra, you know, if A is true, then B. Mm-hmm. So if A is true, the market goes down by 7%. Well, then what is the B? The B is what choices we make as a result. And Maura Summers, who's a neuropsychologist, she's wonderful. She's a leading practitioner in the field of financial psychology and financial change. And she says it takes expertise to accurately classify material meaningful versus irrelevant versus unmitigated rubbish.
I like that.
And it's really hard for the consumer to weigh the relative merits of the information that he or she has in front of her or him. And especially during transition, decisions are much more charged. They can be very emotional times, and none of us make good decisions about anything, let alone our financial course, when we're emotional. So our value here is we really help reduce that volume of information and its complexity. So let me share with you some forecasts for 2020 that we feel very confident about.
Please, yeah.
The first is that the market or the economy, it will do something that surprises us.
Okay.
And I mean us as a nation, us as investors. Okay. Something will come up, such as the fourth quarter of 2018. Mm-hmm. It dropped off a tremendous amount in the fourth quarter. It was really ugly. There wasn't a prediction of that happening. And then what did it do in 2019? It basically came back and delivered an 18% return.
Mm-hmm.
And we can all realize that we can't predict the future, but when we look back, it can seem obvious. You know, we can sit here and this comes out in early February of 2020. We're recording it in mid-January. We can look back from the standpoint of the first quarter of 2020 and look back and say, oh yeah, you know, we stayed allocated, we stayed invested, we did the right things, whether we're the investor or the advisor, and say, see, of course it worked out. But for anybody going through it, there's like, oh, I don't know, because I can't see the future. Maybe this will get worse and I don't want it to go down more.
Yeah.
But when we look back, we can look back with a lot of confidence, and you might be able to think of decisions that, not decisions, but experiences. And I'm saying this you in terms of the listeners, where in the midst of something, you were like, oh, you really wanted to make a change and make a move, but you stayed pat. And when you got through to the other side, you went, oh, of course, you know, of course everything was fine.
Yeah.
And if you're an investor who watches the market or your account balances weekly, or I hope not daily, but maybe daily as well. Oh gosh, even worse, intradaily. Those investors who do that, they will experience more stress than those that don't.
Yeah.
That is a prediction that I'm willing to bet a lot of money on.
I would agree.
Because you can't see. It's like, well, what does it mean? What does it mean that Apple dropped this much or Apple gained this much? It's like, okay, so I'm either a bit more secure or a bit less secure. Can you control Apple? Can you control the forces that make Apple move or not? What about the other types of securities in your portfolio? Is there a balance there to those? But I've heard this for years. You know, I've been doing this for over 25 years, and people gauge their emotional comfort each day by how their stock is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily the quality of their life or whether they're experiencing what they really want, but how their stock is doing. We pull that back and say, okay, what is it that one really wants here? And for all of us in the industry, I'll let the listeners in on a secret. Those who are focused on one or two stocks, they're one of the hardest types of clients to work with.
Yeah.
Because we'll never do as well as that particular stock. We won't in a diversified portfolio. We might not do as badly should it go down, but we may never outperform what a single stock does. But what we're looking for is to create the strategy that one can get their eyes off the market. And unless that's all they want to do for their lives, but most clients coming in here, they want a very different life experience. And we can give them that, but not with that level of excitement that one can get looking back on their individual stock and seeing all the return over time.
Yeah. And I think that I'm pretty safe in saying this. When you ask clients what they want and you're going through your process, which we've talked about on previous podcasts, their goals or hopes or dreams, I don't think any of them are answering you. I would really, Esther, I'm really looking to lose sleep at night and possibly have some hair loss. And I'm going to pick up nail biting, if that's okay with you. And then gambling. I'm all about gambling. So I don't think anybody walks in there saying those are the things they want. But I really, truly believe that people who are constantly watching their stocks and worrying and wanting to make all these little minor changes here and there because of clickbait, because of these other outside influences, that's really what they're asking for.
Right. And how, you know, the ones that come in here, they are saying, this is what I have.
Mm-hmm.
If it was from a divorce settlement, or if it was from an inheritance, or if they're moving into retirement and they need to start, and it's a very difficult thing, start drawing off of this asset base. Like, I will not get this back. I cannot lose this. And the planning is all about, okay, what's a reasonable range of funds to draw off of this each year? And then what will happen to those funds if we do have a drawdown in the market, which is basically means the market falls.
Mm-hmm.
What happens? What if it falls like it did? I was working in the industry in the year 2001 was negative, 2002 was negative, 2003 was negative, 3 years in a row. What happens then? And I have clients still with me that we worked through all of that with. And that's why I feel so strongly about the planning. But another forecast is that you will be tempted, as the listeners, to abandon your plan at some point in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
You will read a headline, see something, a friend will tell you something about what's going on in their life. A new idea will come up and there will be a sense of like, well, this doesn't have anything to do with me, this plan. It's all different. I think I should go another direction completely. That will come up. And believe me, all those were great examples that you gave earlier of clickbait, because what makes it interesting? We're like, oh, maybe they have the answer. Maybe mm-hmm. there's something there that I didn't realize or think of before. Maybe that's it. That will keep me safe. So just expect that one will be tempted to abandon their plan at some point this year. If one follows that, what happens is this other point that I just made a moment ago about when one wants to abandon their plan, there's an attempt to predict the future. And for those that stood pat in 2019 with their plan and just let the market appreciate, we rebalance, we look at what impact the taxes have on that, but we adjust. If there's taxes to be paid on rebalancing, we hold back money to pay the tax, but that still means that the client keeps the majority of that money. It just, nobody likes to pay taxes, I know. Mm-hmm. But when we just follow that plan and follow that course, it seems obvious in retrospect that that's the right thing to do. But going through sometimes, there is that temptation to go a different course.
Yeah. Yep.
And along with that, investors that focus on the things that they can control, they will have a better investment experience than those that focus on what they can't control or they can't predict. Because what happens when we're motivated by trying to react to something, whether it's in our personal life, in relationship with someone, if we react to them versus holding pat and listening, I know you've been through this, Eric. You've helped so many people. I wonder if when you were first in your career, was it more tempting to react, or were you always a good listener?
That's funny you say that, because it one of the skills, and you and I've talked about this before, is being able to not begin to formulate an answer while you're still listening, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to listen fully and completely. And that's where, when we're reactive, I think that is, we're trying so hard to react. Reaction is all about timing, right? So that's why we try to jump the gun. We try to react quicker so that we don't get hit by something. Don't want to get hit by the bus kind of scenario. Don't want to get right. hit by something that's unknown. But yes, I did want to react. And there was a lot of actually training that I did when I worked with at-risk youth, where we had to really learn to turn off our own voice inside our head that was ready to give them the answer, even if it was right. And I'd say 90% of the time, what we're formulating in our brain was what they needed to hear, but we had to hear them out completely to know exactly what the scenario was. Because I don't want to lose that 10%. Even if that 10%, you know, is close to what I was going to say, if it's not exact, then I'm better off by listening and waiting and making the good decision to say the right thing at that point.
Right. And it's so tempting. And one of the things Maura Summers has done in her research is say, how long is it before an investment professional or a doctor interrupts the client?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like something like 28 seconds.
Wow.
And we all can do that in our lives. Again, when we're trying to control something, trying to even help someone, we want someone to have a better outcome. It is very hard to just hear them out and let them say what they need to say. And if as individuals, we're not even letting ourselves sort of run our own course, mm-hmm. what is it we need to say or think? We're going to focus on those things. And if we focus on what we can't control or predict, we're going to make moves in reaction to something rather than in response to something.
Yeah.
So again, the prediction is that the investors who focus on the things that they can control, that they can respond to, C-A-N, respond to effectively, they will have a better investment experience. And most of our clients come because they want a good investment experience that aligns with their healthy life experience.
Makes sense.
And then the final prediction is that investing or spending, because spending is one of the things that really, overspending is one of the things that really can hurt an investment plan. If one says, yes, I see this, I realize I'm going to spend X thousands of dollars out of this portfolio this year, but no more, and then requests for money keep coming in, that really undermines, even if you're having a fabulous market year. Because what in a fabulous market year, what do we do? Do we say, oh, great, the portfolio was up so much more than we thought, you can spend so much more? No. That's like what we do with that. We harvest those acorns for the investment winters that will come. And we keep that as a ballast underneath the client. Again, if they come in and say, you know, I'm looking at doing this, that, or the other. Great. I always want to know what they want to do because it is their money at the end of the day. But they're looking to us. They're not trying to spend with their gut of like, oh, I really want that thing or trip, or I really want to give that to my family member. They're coming in to say, yes, I'm thinking of doing this. And we look at it and say, what does it look like? I'm really happy to say, yes, go ahead. Or if you did, can we do it for a little bit less, but do it, still do it? Or I would really recommend postponing that for a year. We talk all of it through because those who invest or spend with their gut or with their feelings, they will have lower returning results and also higher stress than if one remained disciplined to their financial plan. That doesn't mean, again, people hear that and think, oh my God, I have to sit in the dark and eat bean sandwiches. It doesn't mean that. I mean, that is how the brain hears that, like, oh, I won't have any fun. Yeah. It's saying, no, you create your financial plan with us. We create it, bringing in all of these different things about what are the experience you want to have? What are the life experiences you want? It's just that when those shift a little bit or change or we all can forget, again, I'll draw it back a third time, back to clickbait. We're like, oh, that looks better. You know, the brain gets stimulated. That looks good. That's where we can get into trouble. And investing is simple. It's just not easy. It is difficult to stick with a strategy, especially when it's out of favor. One of my most important roles is helping our clients just decipher all this noise from what really matters for their financial success. Financial success being defined as, does it mean like you have this many zeros in your balance sheet versus your neighbor? Do you drive this car versus that car? Do you live in this house? That's not necessarily the means of financial success. Financial success is you can keep living the way that you want comfortably, regardless of whether the market is up 8.5%+ per Oppenheimer or down 7% per Morgan Stanley, UBS, whatever is going on out there, you still keep moving forward, staying connected with the people and the experiences that really matter.
Yeah.
And when the market drops, which it will, we will do what we did when the market dropped in those years in the early 2000s. And again, during the Great Recession, this is what we do. We're there. We're here for our clients. We reached out. You know, people said, oh, but your phones were ringing off the hook. And they weren't, because we were reaching out to our clients. We were saying, come on in, let's talk about this, or arrange a time on the phone, let's talk. We're present for their questions. So many people, Eric, were angry during that time. They weren't angry with me or with us. They were angry at the whole financial bedrock that they felt had really let them down.
Yeah.
And it did.
Yep.
And we just communicated, stayed with them and listened, and on a technical part, reviewed their cash flow, reviewed their plans, stayed in touch with what was happening overall. And that's what we would do again today when it happens. Not if it happens, but when it happens, because markets do go down.
Yeah.
So those are my predictions for 2020. Expect to be surprised. Expect to be pulled off your course. Expect that if you're watching this thing every day, that you will not have a good experience, that you will be more stressed. And if you're experiencing any of those, that discomfort, I will say, in your investment or financial life, we're here. It's not easy, but we love doing it. We have tons of tools to help, and we have a lot of experience as well.
That's right. And everybody experiences temptation at one point or another. And it's just all about staying the course with somebody who can hold you to that and kind of talk you off a ledge every once in a while. And I know that that's one of your specialties. So Esther, thank you so much. This is a great podcast. And I hope that people learned a lot and they share this one.
I hope so too. Please do share it. Please reach out if you have any questions. The phone number is 650-797-0280. And would love to talk with you.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And thank you, audience, for listening to the Women in Wealth podcast with Esther Szabo. If you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, please click the subscribe now button below. This way, when Esther comes out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. This, again, will make it much easier to share these podcasts with your friends and family, which this will start some great conversations if you do. Again, thanks for listening today. For everyone at Gates Pass Advisors, this is Eric Johnson reminding you to live your best day every day. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Women and Wealth Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you receive notifications of new podcasts as they become available. Check out the website at www.gatespassadvisors.com for more information. This content is developed from sources believed to be providing accurate information. The information in this material is not intended as tax or legal advice. Please consult legal or tax professionals for specific information regarding your individual situation. The opinions expressed and material provided are for general information and should not be considered a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security.